I want to pray, and then let's open our Bibles to the book of Genesis. Jesus, I thank you for where you have us as a church family right now. And I thank you for the wrestle. I believe the Lord's brought us into a season of a divine wrestle. He's invited us into some things that we don't quite grasp. We don't quite have a handle on it, and we feel like we're kind of fumbling forward in a few things. One of them is this whole Israel piece. But I'm telling you, there's an invitation to struggle with God. Answers, and we don't see the clear picture. It just seems foggy and fuzzy, and I'm not quite sure, and the wrestle. What does this all mean? But we can't deny the Lord's inviting us into it kind of wrestle. And Lord, I thank you for the wrestle as a church family, and as we consider the fact that you have positioned us for a state, Lord, I thank you for inviting us into this wrestle, and I ask that there would be freedom to struggle with you until we prevail. Let's go ahead and look at Genesis chapter 32. You guys know this story that Jacob, he is wrestling with the Lord over who he is, who the Lord's called him to be, and his wrestle. I don't have time for the background. But basically, it's this, that the page. Anybody been there? Right? The Lord has a destiny and a calling, and it seems fairly clear. He's not sure how to get there. He's not sure he's qualified. This happening, and he begins to wrestle. And I love verse 30. It says, your name will be no longer called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven or struggled with God and with men, and have prevailed. And I'm telling you, that's really what the name of Israel means, the one who struggled with God. I was telling the story to someone that was here just this, like an weekend. He just goes, well, man, you guys are like, we don't give off this vibe that we're like a messianic congregation. We don't Hebraic roots, messianic focus. We're really not. It's the fact that the Lord just keeps saying who we are and inviting us to it. I remember just being with her and just going, God, I don't know if I resonate with all this profession. I'm just going, I don't know if I'm that. I don't know if we're the right ones to pick if you want to kick off a statewide prayer for Israel. And he did, though. So we wrestle, and we say, why? And we're understanding on. And we say, yes, and we ask the Lord to bring us into deeper. The name Israel is that they are struggling, well, specifically if you were to personify the people of Israel in this story of Jacob being changed to Israel, they're struggling with this whole identity by Israel. And then everybody else struggles with it too. Everybody else goes, why is it South America? Why Israel? What is going on here? And they have to begin to contend and kind of wrestle with it and come to a place. And I want to just say, don't resist the wrestle. Because we tend to kind of say, if I don't get it, I don't want any part of it. Like, I just can't, I don't know. And I just feel like this entire fast and what the Lord's going to do is bringing us into a divine wrestling of just saying, Lord, help me understand. And so I want to give you some tools in the next two sessions today and then next week, some biblical things to help you in your struggle. To say, how am I supposed to relate to this Israel thing? And I love that many of you have been honest with me and honest with some of our leaders and just says, I can't deny that God's putting this together. I'm just not sure I resonate with it. I'm not sure if I'm, you know, I know this guy. They seem to be really fired up about Israel and get it. I'm just kind of going, I mean, I want to participate, but I'm not sure if my heart's there. And so I want to give you a few things, and then just part of this for us is an invitation to the Lord. Say, I'm going to fast and pray, and like Daniel, say, would you give me understanding? And so I want to give you some things to help you as you're going, Lord, would you help me understand? Would you connect my heart? So let's start with Roman numeral 1, upholding the unique identity and destiny of Israel. One of the first things we can start with that just kind of helps us maintain a proper kind of wrestle with this is the fact that Israel was chosen by the Lord. Let's start with that. A, he formed them. All studies of the uniqueness of Israel must start from their them set of additional understanding that God formed them, called them, and declared, saw all the nations, and he picked one. And we got to go, you know what I mean? What is the deal here? But we have to start with that. We have to start that God, whom we trust and love and know is right all the time, who leads well, who is full of love and mercy and grace upon all, looks down. I'm gonna make them my special, he calls them my special creation. I formed them, me, I did. And I'm going to be, they're going to have a special relationship with me, different than all the other nations. And immediately what sets in is offense. We just go, what? That's unjust. That's what happens in our hearts. Exodus 19, but let's look at this, about the Lord doing this sovereignly. Exodus 19, 3 through 6. The Lord called him out of the mountain, this is Moses, saying, you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell all the people of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you'll indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all the people. For the whole earth is mine. But you will be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you'll speak to the people of Israel. I mean, we just get it from the very beginning. They didn't pick him, he picked them. Because I look down, the whole earth is mine, and I want you to know that I decided to you I was going to deliver out of Egypt, to you I was going to carry you specifically, a pillar of fire and a cloud, and all this miracles, signs, and wonders. And guys, there's enslaved peoples all over the earth. He delivered Israel. Welcome to the wrestle. Deuteronomy 32. That never happens to you guys, does it? Deuteronomy 32. I want to look at 8 through 12. When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, the sons of God, but the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob, his allotted, the wilderness, he encircled them, he cared for them, and then he kept them as the apple of his eye. Here's the picture. It's the dispersion of the nations at the Tower of Babel, when the Lord confused their languages and he sent them all over the earth, a people from the desert, and that he, as he allotted all the nations, he said, this particular nation I'm going to allot specifically to myself, different from the others. And they're going to become the apple of my eye. Now, this is an interesting phrase. How many of you guys have heard that phrase, apple of my eye? What it means is, let's see. Take a look at this picture back here. And I want you to focus on the B here, of birth. Focus on that. Now, can you see other things going on as you look at that letter B? Sure can. You can see all the other colors and other moving pieces. But as you focus on the B, That is the apple of your eye. That's the central place of your focus, but you're seeing other things, but you've got a central place that you're looking at. Does that make sense? That is what it means when he says the apple of my eye. He goes, I see it all, but I've got a central, I have a specific focus on this people group. Like an eagle that stirs up its nest and flutters over its young, spreading out its wings, catching them, bearing them upon its pinions, the Lord alone guided him, and no foreign god was with him. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 43. Isaiah 43, we're going to look at just a few verses, but let's start with verse 1. Thus says the Lord, who created you, O Jacob, who formed you, O Israel. Fear not, for I have redeemed you, and I've called you by name, and you are mine. Now we say, well, didn't the Lord create everybody? Yep, he did. But he specifically created a unique people out of that. I formed that nation. He goes, I did. Again, it wasn't their idea. The Lord did it. Verse 15. I am the Lord, your Holy One, the Creator of Israel, your King. Verse 21. The people that I formed for myself, that they might declare my praise. So here we go. We're invited. That our God, whom we love and who we want to be near to, and we want to be in his will and know him and understand. And are you with me? We get invited into that. Zechariah 2, verse 8. For thus says the Lord of hosts, after his glory sent me to the nations who plundered you, he who touches you touches the apple of his eye. Now, this is a last days passage here in the book of Zechariah, and we still see that the people of Israel remain a focal point. And even so, the nations that begin to interact with his focal point. And it's more personal, there's more there, right? I get it. He did something special. Let's go to why. Once we establish the fact that God uniquely formed Israel and set them apart from all other nations, peoples, the natural questions that follows is why. This question is most easily answered and understood when it's seen through the lens of function or calling. And that's generally what we're going to see in the rest of the scriptures we cover, is that the why is answered if you specifically look at the unique function or calling that he called them to. All right? Framework. So we have this lens, okay, of unique calling that Israel has in a framework. And the framework is that we need to understand humanity's history and future within the framework of the unfolding drama of the restoration of all things. So here it is. How many of you know there's been a promise to the end of all death and sin and curse, right? And that humanity is on this dramatic narrative that God is laying out, that where he is the one that brings about that reversal of the curse. Right? And in that narrative, as we see humanity's destiny, drama, this great story, we have a role to play in it. And so does Israel. And so we see this great drama. We understand that within that drama, there's a promise, which I just covered. Within this framework, there is a uniqueness permanently attached to a particular people group whom God has chosen to bring forth the promise of humanity's redemption. Not only would the promised one come through a people group, but many other aspects of the restoration of all things would be deeply and forever connected to this people group. All right. So in other words, he is going to restore humanity by bringing forth a seed. He gives this promise to Eve, right? And then as he looks down, he finds a people group to whom this seed's going to come through. This is going to be a human seed. We know that Jesus is fully God, fully man. So he was born of a woman. So the Lord chose Israel. So not only did he choose Israel to bring forth the seed, he chose them for other things that relate unique to this great story of redemption. Let's look at a few of them. Letter A, they were the unique carriers of the promise. I'm not going to get into that this week. Next week, we're going to look at some of the specific things that we can honor and appreciate about Israel. But today, I'm just going to lay out a few in a broad way. Israel became the catalyst of his timing to bring about this promise. I can show you multiple passages, and we'll look at a few today that say God chose this unique people group. Not only they were going to bring forth the seed, but somehow they were going to respond to the Lord in such a way that would actually be catalytic in his timing of the restoration of all things. This is a big deal. He forever created a uniqueness about the land is what he promised the people of Israel. Because from that place is where he would bring about the actual rule and reign that would bring the redemption. A place in the earth. A city. The city of Jerusalem was set apart as the city where this king would rule and reign and restore all things. And by default, guess what? He is a seed born of a woman. And so connected, his identity as a human is always and forever have to wrestle with the fact that there's going to be a Jewish king who rules the earth forever. Not a Filipino king, not an American king, not a Canadian one, a Jewish one. And in his humanity, he is forever connected to that. And we have to, I cannot think of his name, by a guy named Bleh. It just says, the title is, When a Jew Rules the World. And we're already going, wait a minute. Now here's the thing, letter C, blessing to this people. What do I mean by that? Sovereignly, God did it. They didn't pick him. He picked them. And then an immutable, he spoke and said, I have chosen to call you and to bless you to be this specific, unique people group that I primarily use to restore the earth. That will. And he connect them. And those that bless this, I will bless them. Genesis 12, verse 1. This is the calling right here. The Lord said to Abram, go from your country, from your family. I will bless you, and I'll make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and to him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of earth shall be blessed. So this is the sovereign, immutable blessing to, right? God said. Now what we love about this morning, we sang about it, one of the great staples of this is that God, in his mercy and his sovereignty, picked a people group who constantly say, no, thank you. And he sticks with them, and he sticks with them, and he sticks with them because he said it. You can agree with me or you can disagree with me, but it's happening. Let's go to the rock of jealousy and rage, Roman numeral 2. Satan always rages against the plans and the promises of God by creating division among the brethren. The truth of God's sovereign and unmerited calling has always been an open door for bitter jealousy and anger. The evil one easily gains a foothold within the theme of the unmovable to us. Why does Justin always get the mic? Why not somebody else? Is he special? Is he more holy than other people? Right? We'd go through, how come that guy? Why does I over here to have the dreams every night? I've been praying for 30 years, Lord, give me one dream, and I got this guy over here who doesn't even seem to love the Lord as much as me. The Lord gives him prophetic dreams every other day. It's not fair. You're absolutely right, it's not fair. Do things based on merit. Nobody earns it. He just simply says, here's who you are. I have mercy upon all, right? None of us are on his page. Nobody's better than another. We're all saved by our own work, faith. We're all made righteous by Jesus. We did better than somebody else. That's not how he operates. Thank God. But what happens is we react with anger and bitter jealousy in that argument that says, that's not fair. I want them a prophetic gift, but I've never been able to prophesy over one. Lord, give me a prophetic gift. He goes, well, actually, what I've called you to do is lay your hands on the sick, but you won't do it because you're so obsessed with being prophetic. I've given and opened up an atmosphere where they're more sensitive to my spirit, but it's not that flashy. You're in the back cleaning out toilets, and it's more flashy to have the mic and to prophesy people's mailing address. It is. It's just more, it just seems more important. This is the struggle. And what happens is the enemy begins to go, that's not fair. That guy got picked. Shouldn't be a leader. They've got issues. And we get hung up on their issues. And they say, that's right. I deny their calling. I reject it. They're messed up. The Lord says, well, you're kind of messed up too. Yeah, but not as bad as that guy. And what happens is the brethren begin to fight and argue and rage and faction against one another. Now, let's bring this into the picture of Israel. God looks down, he says, Abraham, you're the one who births a nation that will bring about the redemption of humanity. And he goes, I've chosen you. And that those that see your calling, and even though they totally get how messed up you are, they say, I agree with that. I don't reject it. And I say, God, this is what I will bless them in that. They've aligned with my will. Move again. And for those that kick against it and actually reject or move against it, I'm going to move against them because I have decided. They actually are taking it up with me. And the stumbling stone of Israel's election is revealed. Assignment. When that stumbling stone or that rock is placed before us, we have to decide how we're going to respond to it because that is not moving. I was talking to a friend of mine. He goes, man, how is it? He goes, I'm just kind of here. He says, I've been a Christian my whole life. He goes, this subject of Israel, how come I've never seen it? Figure out how to relate to. Zechariah 12, verse 3. Well, the Lord's not just going to bring us in the last days. Zechariah 12, verse 3. Jerusalem, a heavy stone for all peoples. And all who have set themselves to lift and move this stone, in other words, not to align, they say, nope, I reject that. They will hurt themselves. And all, but I'm going to gather all, they're the apple of my eye. I'm going to actually cause all the nations to focus themselves on Israel. And they're all going to have to wrestle about whether they're going to agree with me or disagree with me, but I'm bringing them all there. But they won't be able to move that heavy stone. They'll have to contend with it. They can't go around it. They can't ignore it. They either have to move. Welcome to the wrestle, gang. In helping us connect, and we find a lot of help, really good stuff in the book of Romans. So I want to look at this, but here's one thing. If you just want to write something down, I really believe that Romans chapter 9 through 11 is going to bring you, during this 21-day fast, highlight, read through those two chapters. And just invite the Lord. Lord, would you help me, speak to me, connect my heart, grow me in my understanding. How do I stand with Israel? So we'll look at a few things here. I'm speaking the truth in Christ. I'm not lying. My conscience bears me witness in the Holy Spirit that I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart. I wish that I myself was accursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brothers, my kinsmen. He says, to them belong the adopted, to them belong the patriarchs, and from their race, according to the flesh, is Christ. He goes, we're entering into the, because this people group has been given the promises, the inheritance, the worship, the glory. And he goes, I'm in pain because they're not. He goes, what do we do with this? And in his context, the letter to the Romans, he has this, what's happening there is he has the Gentile church saying, how do we view Israel as Gentiles? And I'm going, thank you for this, because this is right. And I'm going, this is me. I'm saying, I'm not of the descendants, you know, of Abraham. And I'm saying, so how do I stand? What's my heart posture supposed to be? So he lays this out down. Time next, 9 through 26. I have a son. And we know this is the son of promise. This is the first kind of down payment of the blessing of him using Abraham and making a great nation to whom the promise of salvation would come about. And he says, so about this time, this child. And he says, in the same way, they were not yet born and had done nothing good or bad in order that God's purpose of election might continue, not because of works, but because of him who calls. It was said that the older will serve the younger. We say, well, that's not fair. Right? The older gets the inheritance. The older's in charge. This is how it works in the Jewish family. And so he goes, they weren't even born yet. They couldn't have earned it, and God just elected one and said, I choose. Look at verse 13. This is a rugged. Now, what I can tell you is it doesn't mean what you think. God said, I choose to put my blessing on this one, and I choose not to put my blessing on this one. This one doesn't mean he has like hatred in his heart. He goes, but as I looked, I chose one, and I didn't choose the other. What do we say? Injustice. Verse 14 means, for he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. That, in its context, is the fact that all nations are wicked before him. That everybody, I mean, by, but he goes, I choose to have mercy On whom I choose to have mercy, and I choose to have compassion on whom I have compassion. And I choose to call them even when they don't deserve it. So then it depends not on human will or exertion, but on God who has mercy. I raised you up, Pharaoh, that I might show my power in you, and that my name, and he hardens whom he wills. Then he says to me, why does he still find fault then, for who can resist his will? Now this is really important for where this goes, because in a minute he'll say that God hardened Israel. All right, so this is really important that we get what he's saying right here. So in my people go, right? We've all seen it. Pharaoh says what? Nope, not doing it. So by his own free will, he chooses, and God brings a miracle, a sign and a wonder as a judgment against him. This happens over and over and over. And on the fifth time, four times it says that Pharaoh hardened his heart. Pharaoh said, time he said no. It says that God then hardened that no. So in other words, Pharaoh picked it. He said, nope, I refuse, I refuse, I refuse. And the Lord says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. Since you're going to refuse me anyway, I'm actually going to give you supernatural ability to all the nations might see my glory. This is the picture, okay? That in his free will, he said no, and then the Lord said, okay, since you're going to say no anyway, I want all nations to see my glory, and I'm going to use your rejection of my will to actually put myself on display in a greater way. Let's go ahead. Let's pick it. Let's pick. Some way, God has chosen this unique people group. And they've kicked against him and kicked against him. And then he came as the Messiah. They rejected the Messiah. And then the Gentiles started recognizing the Messiah. And the question is, that he said they're going to be in the earth. And said, you know what? Since you said no to that, now I've decided that I'm going to take this blessing and this calling and place it upon those who believe. You've rejected me. So that's not what happened. Romans goes into this, pain what it was seeking. Rather, the elect spirit of stupor, eyes that would not see, ears that would not hear, down to this very day. And David says, let their table become a snare and a trap and a stumbling block and a retribution to them. Let their eyes be darkened so they cannot see, and they bend their backs forever. People group, they rejected him. They said no to the Messiah. No. He says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you strength to say no. And through that strength that I give you to say no, all the other nations are going to recognize him. That all the other nations can see his glory. So then, what then about the Israel that's saying no? What about them now? How do we position ourselves? Romans chapter 11, verse 11. So I ask, did they stumble in order that they might fall? By no means. Israel, jealous. That means rich. Now, if they're treading much more, where they'll inclusion mean? Now, I'm speaking to you, Gentiles. I want you to get this. It's what he says. Inasmuch as I'm an apostle to you, that I magnify my ministry, for their rejection means reconciliation of the world. Now, what he's doing here is he's saying they were chosen, passages, we've looked at a bunch of them, that says, on that day when all of Israel gets saved, what? That's the day that begins the reversal of the curse. That's the coming of Jesus. And he goes, he's tied to this. Right? So they're given up on that. gospel to go to all the nations. Gang, here it is. If all of Israel would have said yes to Jesus right then, it's over. And a partial hardening came, and the gospel went to the nations. If they would have all said yes, guess what? Today. Because a partial hardening has happened to Israel. He goes, so if this means, if their rejection of him means that now the gospel's gone to the nations, what more blessing, what more will happen to the earth when they as a nation accept him? He says, holy, so are the branches among the others, and now share in that root. Now he's talking about those promises, the inheritance, being called the people of God. He says, just don't do this. Don't be arrogant towards those branches. You need to remember. You'll say, so I could get grafted in. Paul says, you're right. But they were broken off because of their unbelief, and you stand fast through faith. So do not become proud, but fear. They didn't qualify through their works, and you don't either. Through God's sovereignty by grace, he had, but he said, yes, I want to. Note the kindness and the severity of God, severity towards those who have fallen, but God's kindness to you, provided if you continue in his kindness, otherwise you too will be cut off. Here is what he's saying, is stay in that place where it's all about what he's done, not what you do. But a partial hardening has come upon Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. And in this way, all of Israel will be saved. As is written, the deliverer will come out of Zion and he will banish ungodliness from Jacob. So he goes, here's what's going to happen. Israel, till the fullness of the Gentiles comes in, giving them strength to say no. And he says, this partial hardening will remain until the fullness of the Gentiles will come in. Now, that word fullness there has nothing to do with numbers. It's a Greek word that means the fullness of time. Their understanding. So it's not just are operating in the fullness, believe in the fullness of giftings. When you say revival, they're operating in the fullness, and then the partial hardening comes off Israel, and he goes, and that moment, the Gentiles will be so full of love, and so that they will provoke them, and they'll all get saved. Is not connected to, it's not going to happen in a vacuum. It's actually connected to Israel. And they're going to recognize it, and they're going to pray for her, they're going to cry out for her to turn. They're going to love her. I believe they're going to be provoked by that love, by that jealousy. But in regards to the election, they are the beloved for the sake of the gospel, the story. For the gifts and calling of God are what? Irrevocable. Why? Because you didn't earn them in the first place. So how can you, through not operating with them rightly, talking though about Israel? He goes, it's ear of call. Who's the only one who can revoke it? God. Has he revoked it? Does he keep his promises, gang? Or is he a liar? Right? And he goes, so square with this. Let's go ahead and flip the page. But here's the thing, Israel. To it, ain't moving. Get the option. Here's the three things, the three ways people respond when what I just laid out is laid out in front of them. They say, okay, you have to say, I take some sort of position with this Israel thing. He's going to bring out, what is it, Zechariah? Bring every three things. Nope. Israel's not special. Nope. I'm not going to pay attention to that. I understand it's kind of a major theme. It's not that important to me. Lord says, wait a minute, the apple of my eye? Are you with me here? Right? Because you don't want to end. Are you with me? Or they reject them and say, actually, get rid of them. Get rid of them. They shouldn't be the apple of your eye. Let's just eliminate them. Get them out of the picture. So they reject. I say no to them. I don't even want them to understand God's, you want that election. Rather than saying, I'm not that, they say, I am, or I want that. They can't be unique and special. I want to be that. And so they do supersessionism. What this happened, this is where most of the church is, that just simply read the word Israel, place, you just put in unique calling. With exploit it. This is actually a growing trend in Christianity. They say, okay, I see Israel's very unique, and I say now, I am Israel. Keep the Torah, and I'm going to become Israel because I want this blessing on me. See, you can recognize it. It says in the book of Romans, say, guys, don't say that you've replaced the branches. Don't reject them. Just say, I recognize that the root supports me. I recognize their unique calling, and I will stand with them till it happens. The only plan of redemption that they have recognized. You know, this global fast is called this one that we're a part of. Our Colorado Stands with Israel initiative is part of this global fast. When it first got launched, they were hoping for 100,000. That would go 21 days, and then 21 days, 100 million. The last that we counting at 3 million. They wanted 100,000. They got 3 million that are going to do 21 days. And that 100 million number is growing. Let's look at 1 through 7. Matt, you can start. For Zion's sake, I won't keep silent. For Jerusalem's brightness and her plan, and I'm going to partner with it. I will not refuse to be settled until it happens. I will not keep silent. For Jerusalem's sake, not because God has placed I'm calling upon her. He goes, for the sake of... Skip down to verse. He says, I've set watchmen. I've set people who will look and say, I believe and I'm contending for what God said about Israel until it happens. Because I'm going to set them there. They're going to not give me any rest. They're going to go day and night and say, in the earth, for Zion's sake, you... And I'm not going to keep... He says, this is the Lord saying, I'm going to so touch the watchmen, the people who are seeing what I'm doing and partnering with it. I'm going to so touch them. That burden is going to be so heavy, they won't stop crying out. Connect. He's going to build a wall 21 days and say, Lord, would given to me to contend day and night. And he says, I'm going to do this. You who put the Lord in remembrance, you who take time to talk to the Lord and recognize what the Lord is doing, he says, I'm going to do such a thing. You will a praise in the earth, gang. And I, people of God, say, I'm going to come in to wrestle with it until I prevail. And the idea behind Jacob actually prevailing is when he fully agreed. He says he struggled with God until he fully agreed with what God said. He says, contend with my heart. Until you get on. I want to pray over you guys. Why don't you go ahead and stand up? Here, I'm real fired up. But I see these things, but I can tell of Paul's burden where he goes, I have continual grief and weeping in my heart. I'm not there. I got some. But I'm probably, like a lot of you, saying, I've seen and touched. I understand. But Lord, I set me on the wall. Put me there, God. Help me. So Lord, I just pray over, invited us into a divine season of wrestling. And one of the issues that you're placing before us to wrestle with is what you've said about Israel, and more specifically, what you've said about this specific church family and our stance with Israel, our destiny. Heart, and Lord, bring us into the fuller picture. Just prophesied over this church family, the Lord's going to do something specifically in this church that will affect the state of Colorado, and you guys will stand for Israel in such a way that many other states are going to find it helpful. They begin to emulate what you're doing. We're seeing it happen. It's going to happen May 7th. And I'm just saying, God, connect your agenda. God, you've placed this in front of us. Lord, I pray that you'd give us grace and strength and ability as we fast and pray and we cry out like Daniel, give us understanding. I'm wrestling the fact I don't have the understanding I want to have at your heart.